Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well and everything's going good for you. Weather is picking up a bit, makes a bit of a difference. And I've had the most amazing week away. I mentioned a bit about it, didn't I? I went to just the most fabulous retreat centre, sanctuary, and it was just so restoring to step away from, kind of mainstream news and everything for a while. This was not last week, but the week before. But it's still very much in my mind because it was just so healing to be able to kind of, take some time to focus on goals and stuff. And it's interesting because I do an awful lot of work like this with clients, of course, and I'm always asking clients to focus on what it is they want, because sometimes we don't know. So I often talk a lot about creating vision boards and setting your intentions and thinking about your goals. And when I kind of landed on this retreat last week, when the question was asked of me, I wasn't sure. And it made me realize, my goodness, you spend an awful lot of time kind of pointing fingers at other people and you got, you point the thumb at others and you got four pointing back at you. And it really is the case that I have to regularly kind of look at myself and make sure that I'm doing the stuff that I'm constantly banging on about for other people, especially the self-care. It also made me realize when I was away week before last that I talk about self-care and I don't always put enough of it in place. My mind is so active, I'm so kind of in control, or I want to be in control all the time, micromanaging stuff from a distance. It really made me realize, God, I have to look at that. I have to kind of be willing to let go of that busyness for the sake of it and actually properly focus on self-care. Because, that's what we all need. I met some wonderful, wonderful people on the retreat that I was on. We were a very sort of disparate group, but it was absolutely amazing. It was all about spirited business. So everyone had some kind of business or some kind of work they were trying to do to, in a way, make the world a better place. So very kind of lovely, conscious people. And it was just fascinating. Obviously, I'm not going to name any names, but, there's one guy who unbelievably successful in his career. He was in his 70s, had been so incredibly successful, such a powerhouse of a man, really, really wonderful, amazing guy. And yet when we got into conversations about self-love, he kind of admitted, he kind of joked about it and said, well, I'm quite cross actually, because I thought I was doing okay. And you've actually kind of pointed out my weak spot, that I don't accept love easily. And I don't really have that sense of self-love. And I thought, wow, how amazing to be honest enough to admit that. And it really is a thread that runs through so many people. I had another really interesting conversation with someone who, again, has got that real sense of there's something missing, that self-love piece, that being okay with who you are, that being able to kind of sit in meditation. And that was a very interesting conversation, because in that instance, when I, got onto the topic of booze, it turns out that it was absolutely getting in the way. And I do find it fascinating. There are still obviously lots of people who aren't aware of this sort of spectrum of drinking. We are all very clear that there are people at rock bottom. Close to the centre I was at in Yorkshire, there's a rehabilitation centre. And, we all recognise the need for those who are clinically dependent and do need rehabilitation. But then there's this massive spectrum moving up from there of grey area drinkers. That's the term. You know, we know that now. I'm trained as a grey area drinking coach, and it really is a thing. And we really have to make more of this, because this is the place most people are at. And as I, you know, said in my TEDx talk, there are many shades of grey, you know, at least 50, none of them sexy. And it really is a case of, where are you on that booze spectrum? And in the case of the person I was chatting with, it was really interesting, because she had never even considered that booze might be a factor in any way in her, in sort of restricting her personal development and her growth and her, well, self-care and self-love, really. And it was only when I asked her that direct question, you know, could your life be better physically and emotionally without the booze? You know, how I start off my book. And she kind of paused and thought about it. And then she said, well, yeah, I don't drink every day, but when I drink, yeah, I kind of lose a couple of days. I have to plan to be hungover, and so that wastes a ton of time. Yes, I do have to kind of plan my if I plan a night out, I've got to make sure that I'm not going to need to work the next day. So yes, if I didn't have to do that, of course. And it was really interesting. Isn't it interesting that we plan, you know, feeling crap time? We actually put into our diaries, oh, I'm going to feel shit that day. But that's okay, because it's the done thing, right, to drink. And the more we can raise awareness of this spectrum and the fact that, you know, so many people are at a different shade of grey, they're somewhere on that spectrum. But here's the really cool thing. You can get off. You can step off. It is possible. I know, because I've done it. It is possible. But first of all, you have to recognise where you're at. And then you have to obviously put in place the tools and the inspiration and the motivation to make that worthwhile for yourself, to grab hold of that motivation. It's not just the logic. The logic on its own won't work. The logic is wonderful. And I urge you, if you haven't already, read William Porter's book, Alcohol Explained. It's an easy read. It gets it across to you really in no uncertain terms. And obviously, I'd love you to read Happy, Healthy, Sober as well. William has done a section for us in there. But, you know, get inspired. Really seriously, get the logic. So really do understand that alcohol is poison. Let's not sugarcoat it. Why would we? It's poison. It has zero benefits. I'm not going to get on that high horse again. You've heard me say it a lot of times. If you've listened to the podcast before, it has zero benefits ever, right? Zero benefits. It can only do harm over time, whether that's to you or to your immediate family or to the economy or to your workplace that suffers because you ain't in that day or you're not functioning properly, whatever it might be. So it has no benefits. But even more important in a way than recognizing that it isn't good for you is that this recognition, this catching sight of the fact that life is so much better without. And when you can get a little sense of that, when you can get a sense of the excitement, wow, then things start to feel possible. And, you know, I've mentioned it many times, my absolute mission is to get this positive message across, get this positivity piece across, just to quit with this concept of, oh dear, you know, you're drinking too much. Oh, that's a shame. How can we make it so you drink a little bit less? No, forget that. How can we make it so that you recognize how amazing life is without any? And, you know, the medical profession have a massive part to play in this. I'm a really big believer in that. I'm not blaming them, because none of us know what we don't know, right? But we have to find a way of raising awareness. And in the Sober Club last week, as I'm sure you all know, I run a platform around changing the conversation around alcohol. It's called The Sober Club. You can go to the website, thesoberclub.com. We have blog posts, we have competitions. Obviously, there are all of these podcasts there. And then there's another level where you can join us as a member in our pay a monthly fee. It's a small monthly fee. It's no more than a couple of beers a week. And the amount of content you get is incredible, including an online course and inspiration and obviously our private community. Anyways, in that community, in our group, one member said, wrote a piece on Facebook, on our Facebook post, and said, I forget the exact words, but something on the lines of that she'd spoken to her GP about the fact that she ditched the booze, you know, probably said it, you know, quite proudly. And the GP's response was, oh, how boring. I mean, seriously, seriously, that is just unbelievable. I remember it took me a lot to be able to admit that I was drinking too much. For years, I couldn't admit it to anyone, even myself. It was this massive elephant in the room that I was stepping around. And once people do become able to mention it to their GP, they need massive inspiration and support. I know the GP can't necessarily know about grey area drinking. They don't, many of them. I understand that. But they absolutely need to be open to the possibility of people, when they reach out, being able to be signposted to somewhere that can inspire them to you know, do things differently. So, yeah, that was sobering reading that, man. I hope it's changing. You know that in Happy, Healthy, Sober, in my book, I've got a couple of GPs who've contributed, and they're so on it and so aware of what's going on. It's brilliant. Dr. Gemma Newman has written a piece in Happy, Healthy, Sober. Dr. Hannah Short. There are many, you know, eminent scientists and medical professionals and therapists who've contributed sections. So I do think things are changing. I really hope so. But anything that anyone can do towards helping with this positivity, please just drop little bits of light wherever you can. If you have ditched the booze, then, you know, just drop little bits into the conversation every now and then. You don't have to become completely evangelical. You'll drive people mad. But just drop it into the equation. And if you aren't already sober, then just make sure that you're not one of the sober shamers. If someone, you know, people are coming out of lockdown, going to events or parties or whatever, meeting up. And if you see someone who's not drinking, don't make a thing of it. You know, I'm sure you wouldn't. If you're listening to this podcast, you're kind of already invested, right? To a certain extent. So our Champneys retreat was fantastic. A couple of weekends ago, I'm still kind of processing that. And I know a lot of the attendees are as well. We did so much work around this self-care piece. Everything tracks back to that, because once you really have got a sense of liking yourself, which I certainly didn't when I was drinking, when you've got that sense of liking yourself, when you know what it is you want, and you've got a sense of, okay, this is good for me, I'm going to do these things that are good for me, then the alcohol piece just doesn't actually fit with that. It really doesn't. When you start to care about yourself, you recognize that really it's self-harming to just be pouring in more toxic liquid. And creating more anxiety. So it does all fit together. You know, I realize that so much of what I do is not about not drinking. That's a kind of given. And then we're on to the, okay, what's next? How do we make, you know, our lives fabulous? How do we get more healthy? How do we focus on what we want and our purpose? How do we improve our relationships? How do we find that sense of equilibrium and peace that for many of us escapes us for so many years? And in the case of this beautiful man, you know, in his 70s, he was just realizing that was that missing piece. And how wonderful that now he'll, you know, be able to go after that. You got to recognize it, you know, it's missing before you can find it, right? A couple of weeks ago as well, it was the third anniversary of the day that I'd been to see Rocket Man. You know, most of you know if you've listened to this podcast, oh man, I loved that film, the story of Elton John's life. And and I put a pic on Instagram of me with Zoe Ball. We went to a press screening, and then I saw it another four times with different my kids. You know, I kind of went with one and then I went with a couple of others, and it made such an impact on me. I love that film. I'm only saying it because if you haven't seen it already, I'm sure it's now at, well, I know it's out on video and it's probably on Netflix or whatever else. So do watch it. It's a film that has so much to share around, not just obviously Elton's great music and career, but around the importance of the, you know, the kind of childhood piece, the childhood trauma, the limiting beliefs that you carry from your childhood. Such important messages in that movie. And then the importance of forgiveness and how you can reframe that, you know, those early childhood experiences, which have a massive impact on us as adults, you know, and on whether or not we end up drinking, actually. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the ACE study, A-C-E, and the work of Vincent Folletti. There's some really fascinating stuff around the impact of our childhood, what went on in our childhood. And it may not be full-on abuse, by the way, if you're thinking, oh, well, that's not me. It can be, you know, just things that happen to many of us, actually, in childhood. But the impact on us can be huge. So I'm not suggesting, you know, years of therapy and navel-gazing or anything like that. I think sometimes it's just a case of making sure that you have got a sense of what went on so that you can heal it. You know, it's this thing of it, what happened to you is not your responsibility, is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. It's not your fault, but it is now yours to deal with. So we did a lot of work around that at Champneys, and it was great to see those pics pop up on the reminder pics on Facebook about the third anniversary of when I saw Rocket Man. Anyways, today's guest is an interview that I recorded a while back. So there probably won't be mentions of lockdown and stuff. And I actually don't know why I didn't run this before. Something happened and I ended up not running the podcast. But anyway, the time is now. So Sean is a fitness expert. Since we recorded the podcast, he's been doing a lot of work with sober golfers. He's got a kind of Facebook group called Sober Golfers. So if that's, you know, your interest, then, you know, fascinating. He does golf days and stuff like that. And it's a free Facebook group. So make sure you check that out. Anyways, it's all about fitness and where it links with sobriety. So enjoy the interview. Hi, I'm really pleased today to be talking about fitness and nutrition and a great lifestyle, all the stuff that I love talking about. And my guest is Sean from Fitology. Now, Fitology combines transformational life coaching with fitness and nutrition coaching. Sean, really interested to chat to you, and we'll get into all the stuff about the fitness and the work that you do. But I'd love to just hear a bit about your story first.
Yeah, so I'm 34 years old, live over in Wimbledon, and Fitology sort of came around from my own recovery from drug addiction. So for me, most of my 20s living in South London were sort of going out with friends, doing drugs, getting drunk, that old age thing after university, you get into a lot of bad habits. So ever since I was at university in Nottingham, got good grades, etc., fell into a job, and then somehow found myself at the age of 31 checking into rehab after living a chaotic lifestyle with cocaine addiction. So it's strange looking back at it now, but in terms of everything that I've gone through was complete chaos for most of my 20s.
Can I just interrupt you there just for a minute, just before you get onto the recovery bit? I'm just really interested in this sort of what led you into that addiction, that cocaine, particularly the cocaine. I just wonder how, I'm always interested in how rife it really is, and what were your sort of circumstances? You know, as you say, you'd done well at uni, presumably you had a good job. Looking back, what do you think was going on there?
I think from looking back, it is the fact that I was never confident in myself. So for me personally, it was a case of I probably overate when I was younger. So I was always bigger. Self-confidence was never there. Went to university and put 4 stone on in weight through drinking and eating badly for 3 years. And I think it was just when I progressed from leaving university to then having to deal with situations that I probably wasn't ready for. And I just turned to alcohol. If I wasn't a drug addict, I would have been an alcoholic. Because before I found cocaine, it was just getting as drunk as I could do, that sort of typical binge drinker, which is sort of normalized at university as well. So you sort of come out of university thinking that isn't that strange because other people would do it.
But yeah, it's very much the societal norm, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people sort of grow out of it. And with age, I started looking at myself a bit more, thinking, this isn't normal to still be doing this at 28, 29, 30. I think it was more the societal pressures. My mum and dad had brought me up brilliantly. It was no reflection on my upbringing. I've had a very good life. It's just I turned to the wrong thing for the wrong reasons, and rather than try and get self-confidence through fitness and self-development work. It was just a bit too late until I realised. And then mentally and physically and everything else, financially, I was broken. So that was my point where I realised I needed to sort of get the help.
And what was that sort of catalyst for change then? When did you really know, okay, something has to change? And you say you checked into rehab. I mean, that's not an easy route, is it?
No. So I admitted that I had a problem back in 2016. So in 2016, I had a house, I had a nice car, I had a gorgeous girlfriend, really good job, was about to buy my second home, but I was actually broken to bits internally. Now, for 2 years, I didn't really get any help. I admitted that I needed help. Yeah. I went to an NHS counsellor and she said to me, did you want to reduce your consumption of cocaine or give up completely? So looking back at the help that I got from the NHS counsellor, it probably wasn't the best. And I didn't know any different because I wasn't going to AA or CA meetings at the time. So it was a case of going through that, and also I sold my house back in 2016 to try and turn professional, but I guess I was doing what they call in AA, doing a geographical in terms of trying to move elsewhere to think that my life would have been better.
Yeah.
But actually, all my bad habits
you
just followed me. Yeah, just a 24-hour flight over to Sydney. And then the same happened in Cape Town. And it was when I spent the last few pennies of my house sale, which I got quite a lot of money from, was the main reason I was sort of looking at potentially being homeless, although I don't think mum and dad would have ever let me get to that point. And that was the realisation where I just thought, I need to go into rehab. I was working for a company that had it in their private medical insurance clause. And I just rang them up and I said, look, I'm in a desperate state here. I've been trying to give up for 2 years with it not getting any better. And then they accepted me in about a week later, thankfully.
And which country was this? Were you back in the UK at that point?
Yeah, so that was the Priory in
Roehampton. Okay. And how long were you in rehab and what was that experience like? I don't think I've ever asked anyone that before.
It was really good. So for me personally, I walked into this group of people for the first day you get introduced. It's a 28-day program. It's a rolling program. So new people come and go every 28 days. But I walked into the room of people there. So I remember there was a guy there who had cirrhosis of the liver and he literally looked like a dead man walking. But I just felt a great sense of relief that I'd finally got to a place where I could get the help that I needed. So for me, I didn't feel like I forced myself. I just felt like it was the right place for me at the right time.
Yeah.
And then I said to myself, I'd give myself the best chance of getting through all of it and just go in with an open mind and do what they say. So that was 2.5 years ago now. But it was a really good, like the Priory is amazing. It's expensive. It was 22 grand for 28 days.
Wow.
And then you have sort of therapy for a year afterwards, which the insurance will pay for through the company. Because otherwise I probably wouldn't have been able to afford it if it wasn't for that. And I don't think I would have had the bottle to have asked or told my parents either for a bit longer. Just because that's the way I've always been. That sort of male pride has always stopped me from asking for help.
Yeah.
But it was really good. Like their setup is they do group meetings twice a day. You have to go to an AA, a CA, an NA, or an Overeaters Anonymous, or all types of anonymouses they do for those 28 days. So that it's good for getting you out and understanding how the steps work in terms of the recovery, and just a good insight into why you do things and preparing you for the real world.
Interesting. So when did you decide then that when you left rehab, that's when you decided that you were going to sort of change your life? And what was the sort of thinking at that point then?
It was my whole thinking on the 2nd of January 2018. I woke up after a heavy Christmas, as people do, and New Year's. And I just said to myself, if I put half the effort I put into being a drug addict into living the life that I wanted to, then I should be quite successful at it. So I said to myself, I've always been into my fitness, but being hungover for the majority of the week, there's only really ever one day of the week where I felt good about myself, which is when I went to the gym. So I got a sports coach because I'd always been heavily involved with golf. as my main passion, and just decided to concentrate on getting better in my sport and just physically being fitter and stronger, because I was 5 stone heavier than I am now. So for me, I had all the wake-up calls of being put in hospital. My blood pressure was sort of 200 over 160, so I shouldn't be here in all regards. But I'd sort of taken all those signs and just said to myself, look, give it a good go. And having the routine with the fitness and the nutrition, I just really enjoyed it. And I think you need that when you stop boozing, and I stopped socialising because I just had to cut everything out because I didn't want to live that same sort of routine. The fitness filled that void and gave me that endorphin rush that I wouldn't have otherwise have got.
So for the average person then who's ditching the booze now, you know, how important do you think, let's just talk about fitness. I mean, how important do you think it is? I know that you hear some people who say, you know, they almost have a cross addiction. They almost become addicted to fitness, and maybe that's a good thing. But what about the people for whom that feels much harder, and they actually sort of, they ditch the booze and then they get into a complete sugar head. And if anything, they put weight on and they feel less fit than when they were drinking. How important do you think it is to focus on it?
I think it's that old thing of balance, isn't it, at the end of the day? Because I was the same. When I came out of rehab, I did put weight on for a short time because eating far too much chocolate, as I still do from time to time. But it's a case of, if fitness really isn't something that you think you enjoy, I think it's always a good thing from a personal development point of view just to give things a go. Because I think people will change their minds once they try something, and you can't get away from the science behind the endorphin rush that you get from doing exercise. And it's that thing, once you start pushing yourself through exercises, you start seeing changes in your own physique and the way that you feel. You can walk around without being out of breath. And then the mental clarity you get from it as well. I think people underestimate the link between the mind and body.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the brain, certainly that brain chemistry thing in those first few months, everyone forgets about that, don't they? They forget that if you're no longer drinking, then everything gets out of whack. It's so true. What about someone who they really are at the beginning stages and actually they can't think of anything they enjoy? Is it a case of, you know, the best fitness for you is the thing that you enjoy? Or is there something that works, you know, is there something that you'd say, look, whether you like it or not, just for God's sake, go out for a run? What would be your take on that?
I think you always start with something that you're passionate about. So for me, golf is good. A lot of people don't see golf as fitness. It is. It's 4 hours walking.
I was going to say, it feels like it's hours and hours of just being away from home. I suppose that's a good thing.
Yeah, but you're out in nature as well, yeah. And all the golf courses around here are amazing. So you can burn 600 to 1200 calories doing golf. But
really?
Obviously, golf's yeah. Like people really don't think golf's big a thing, but it is. It's huge. But it's generally start with anything you're passionate about. So do something that you've done before that you know you like, because you'll instantly be more motivated to want to continue it. But otherwise, if you want to get into fitness, this might sound like a bit of a self-promotion thing, but there's no better way than getting a personal trainer, because they will understand where you're starting from, and then they'll take you through a progressive journey, because essentially everything works on progressive overload. So you always need to do a bit more than you did the time before in order to get the changes that you want. And it should be, the focus is not just on what you look like physically, but it's more the mental strength you get from it.
Yeah.
It's like running. If people start running for the first time, they start getting, they say they do a 3K run, they get 1K in, and then mentally they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. But once they get through that, then it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling thing that they want to beat the time. And then that just sort of escalates. And it's just the importance around trying to maintain that for the long term and actually having it as a sustainable routine that you do, rather than just a quick fix, which a lot of gyms are sort of centered around that sort of Love Island physique, try and get that in 3 months' time and then you can revert back to type. But I know from having a load of bad habits in the past, it's important to ingrain those in a sort of routine. And a healthy routine is a good one, because it helps you reach all the other goals that you want to do in life, whether that's business or personal relationships, etc.
Yeah. And what about for somebody like me then, who, you know, I love my kind of yoga and dance, but really not, you know, I find anything that kind of hurts. Yeah. I'm not so good at that.
Well, you say that, like yoga. So I started yoga when I came out of rehab, and that hurts.
Well, that's true. I suppose so. Yeah. I suppose so.
And it's probably because you've got used to it to a certain extent that you don't feel like you're potentially pushing yourself as much as you did at the beginning. And anything like yoga is one of the hardest things I do.
But there's nothing aerobic about it, is there? So I sometimes worry that I don't get enough aerobic fitness. I mean, I do some dance, but I've never been able to run. And one part of me, I've always sort of half thinking to myself, should I challenge myself to try and run? I don't feel as though it comes naturally to me. I don't know whether I'm just, I mean, here's an interesting question for you. Can everybody run?
Yes. I personally hate running.
Do you?
I mean, it's the number one thing I've always said for my entire 34 years that I will never run. But strangely enough, in the last month, me and my mate meet up at Richmond Park and we go for a 10K run.
Wow.
And it's a sort of a natter.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's not a good 10K run, but it's just nice being out in the open, speaking with a mate and just sort of, yeah, it's just healthy for mind and body doing it. And it's something that I've learned, it's just grown on me. And I think a lot of people will have similar stories about running. Once you do it, then you get into the habit of doing it. It becomes second nature. And I think there's Couch to 5K, which the BBC promote as well, I think.
And so that's fast walking won't cut it for me then?
You can do fast walking. Like, that's what I do for golf, basically.
Yeah.
So there's always, as long as you're doing something, going for a walk's just as important as not doing anything, because you can really clear your mind and it's just healthy to be outside rather than be locked up in this lockdown at the moment.
Exactly.
I think everyone's going a bit insane. It's like Groundhog Day every day at the moment.
What about HIIT training, you know, the high intensity interval training? What's your view on that?
So that's the hardest thing I do in terms of a quick 30 minutes. You just have to accept the fact you are going to be pushed to your limits for probably about 12 minutes out of those 30 because of the way that they work it. You work to certain aerobic zones.
Yeah.
And the HIIT principle is to try and make you burn fat a lot more efficiently than if you're doing like a long 1 hour run. And it's good to mix things up. So if you're doing a training program, don't just do HIIT all the time. Do weight training, do running, do cycling. I think variety in all this is what keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
And no personal trainer should be training the same body parts over and over again every time, because the body naturally needs to confuse itself and develop other areas. But HIIT's a great way. Especially when you do it as classes as well, because you've got everyone suffering at the same time, so it doesn't feel as bad.
Yeah. And what about the nutrition then? Where does that fit in for you?
So nutrition is the one thing that I've only probably recently got grasp of. Once I passed my nutrition exams, that's when the light bulb clicked, because I'd always used that from a young age to overeat for other reasons. Is probably where my addictions came from. I'm half Italian, so I've always had a very good relationship with food and always eat this and eat that. So for me, the nutrition's 80% of the hard work. If you can get your nutrition right and into a good habit, then the rest is a lot easier. But I think everyone struggles generally with the nutrition side.
Well, I think certainly when you first ditch the booze, it can be a real deal breaker, actually, can't it? Because I think, I mean, my experience is that I found that, you know, with the members of the Sober Club, I'll have clients who, one of the reasons they're ditching the booze, not the only reason, but one of the reason will be that they want to lose weight in many cases. And they all have this perception that they'll immediately lose weight within 2 weeks. Like I did, you know, I was gutted when I hadn't lost weight within 2 weeks, you know, until I realized how it worked. But because they have this kind of underlying thing of, oh, I want to lose weight, then they ditch the booze and then either forget to eat or just eat crap. and then wonder why all the brain chemistry stuff is a mess. You know, so I think you know, in the early days, it's critical. Sorry, anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, well, no, it's exactly on to your point, though, because you have to train the person to realise that, you know what, you might not actually lose that weight in 2 weeks, a month, or even 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that is very much the case. When you do stop boozing for the first time, like, I lost 5 stone over 2.5 years, but that's because I sort of had a healthy rhythm going as well with routine. Yeah. But yeah. I would overeat because I sort of justified in my own head that because I don't drink, I can eat more.
Yeah.
But you can't. If you want to get the results and you want to be truly healthy, then you do need to get that balance right. And I think it's a mindset thing. My mindset's changed to the fact I actually enjoy healthy food. So it doesn't seem like it's a hard ask on me anymore.
Yeah.
When you're starting that off, you have to sort of train people to think that way as well.
Yeah, definitely. And what about the sugar thing? Because, of course, that will be the thing that you know, everyone kind of at the beginning, they, you know, as you say, we often put weight on because we go for the sugar. What would be your tips for someone who, you know, really wants to avoid that reaching for the sugar thing?
So not that long ago, about 4 months ago, I decided to swap my chocolate tin for a fruit bowl. Mm-hmm. So if you sort of substitute sweet fruits for that initial sugar hit, it's a different type of sugar and it's used in different ways, but it's generally a lot healthier for you. So I just went for sort of pears and plums to sort of take away that sweet tooth, because I got into a habit after dinner, I'd have to instantly have chocolate for a sweet tooth type of thing.
Yeah.
And then that was bad. That and biscuits as well, which is never good. So, yeah, just swap out sweet stuff for fruit would be my top tip.
Mm. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to share with us then that you find, you know, is good for people in those early weeks or at any stage, actually? Because, I mean, sometimes people can take a good few months before they've nailed the booze ditching bit. And then they start to think, okay, wow, my horizon's opening up and now I want to get fit. Now I want to think about nutrition. Is there anything else that you'd recommend apart from getting a coach?
I think the self-awareness part of understanding why you used to turn to alcohol in the first place is probably the biggest thing you would need to get a grasp of. And then that doesn't come overnight. That comes from self-reflection. For me, it came through doing the steps. Although I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore, that gave me that sort of spiritual grounding and self-reflection of all the reasons and character defects of why I did what I did. I try and train my clients to have a stronger self-awareness, whether that's emotional, mental, physical, and then spiritual, is just a good way of, once you understand yourself, it's that whole thing of once you're happy with yourself, then you can be happy with other people as well. So it's just trying to train that in the early days of sobriety as much so you can always have a bit of self-reflection on why you do things, how you've reacted in certain situations as well.
Yeah. So I'm guessing for you, I mean, if you look back now, you're like a different person, right?
Yeah. So I was a cocaine snorting alcoholic gambler that was your typical lad that you'd see in a boozer and you'd think, well, what a bit of a dick. But now I'm into my yoga, like, I'm kind, I try and do things because I want to do them for the right reasons, as opposed to, yeah, before, mentally I was never in the right place for a number of years because of the lifestyle that I was trying to attain, which wasn't sustainable. But now life's just nice and comfortable. My brain sometimes overthinks and stuff, but I'm training people to just slow down a bit, because everyone's mind wanders from time to time, and it's just good to have that self-reflection from where I used to be to where I am now. I just really enjoy my life at the moment, which 2.5 years ago I probably wouldn't have thought was possible.
Yeah, definitely. So what would be your, you know, what's your been like, I suppose you've already told me the benefits, but what would be your main sort of top tip for people then who are thinking of making this change? There might be somebody listening who's in exactly the same stage as you, you know, they're just thinking, oh, wow, can I really make this massive change?
I think everything in sobriety is all the time you get. And I know that from...
Oh, what, the time that being sober gives you. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, because I do everything for me when I want to do it, and I'm naturally up and doing stuff. Like, I don't actually second guess it anymore. I just do a lot with my life without really thinking about it, because that's the way I am. I don't waste whole weekends hungover ordering pizza. I do the exercises. I go to yoga. I meet mates. I go for runs.
You've got time to spend 4 hours playing golf.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing as well, to be fair, I could always find time for that. And then the other thing as well is the connection with the family. So alcohol massively ruined my relationship with my family, because I couldn't trust myself. And because I wasn't happy with myself, my mum and everyone could sort of feel that as well. So now I actually enjoy being around my niece and nephew and going to family events, because I'm actually proud of where I am now, whereas before I was always in the back of my head, felt so ashamed of everything. And it's that connection you get sober, whereas before your connection with people was through alcohol.
Yeah.
And those relationships quickly show whether they stick around or not. As happened to me, like, I thought good friends of mine were good friends until I went into rehab and stopped drinking. And then
I was going to ask you about that, actually, what had happened for you socially. So your relationship, your friend's circle changed fairly dramatically, did it?
Yeah, I think in terms of, I still speak to my friends from that sort of past, but it's literally like my best friends are on one hand now. And because I no longer boozed or did any of that, that connection had completely gone. And I just never really heard from any of them.
I think a lot of people find this really tough, actually, just on this note. You know, I think a lot of people find that can be what holds them back from actually making the decision to stop, because they're so fearful of losing those friendships, and who they think they are around other people has become their identity. So it can feel really frightening, actually, for some people to make the decision to stop, because they think they can't imagine a future where they're not going out socializing with the same group. What would be your tip to those people?
It's just something you need to do for you. Yeah, I think it's not you. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time around.
Yeah, I love that. I love that concept. That's so true.
And I've only just got that recently.
Yeah,
it took me probably about 2 years to actually get that, because I felt myself still feeling that loneliness and trying to go back into the group. But actually, now I'm on my own path. I'm doing different things. I don't mind socializing every so often, going to the pub, etc. But generally, my life's changed from that. And it's a case of doing it for yourself, because at the end of the day, if you don't do it for yourself, no one else is going to do it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, amazing. So just tell us a bit about the work that you do now then, Sean, and what you offer.
So Fitology is offering a sort of lifestyle package in terms of offering life coaching services, which can also include the fitness and nutrition as well. So it really is a sort of one-stop shop for people that want to sort of change their life around. They need the extra support, and the fitness and nutrition just seems to work perfectly well, because for me, I think having a good fitness and nutrition base gives you the ability to then go and act on all the various things you want to do in life as well, whether that's business or personal goals. So it's a lot around goal setting, and then obviously from my own experience, I've also done packages for those in recovery. So it's my experience in trying to support them through recovery, but also giving them the life coaching and the fitness and nutrition on top as well. Because I think for me personally, it was that sense of purpose growing up. I never really knew why I'm on this planet. So I just ended up doing drugs and doing the same old bad routines. So I think life coaching is good, because it gives people an understanding of what they might actually want to do. And then that gives them leverage in terms of wanting to do more than just do drugs or drink at a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Just very briefly, just to pick up on something that you said right at the beginning. You know, when you first sort of rocked up to the GP or the you know, to sort of explain your problem, and you know, you were basically asked whether you want to sort of reduce it or whatever. it's such a big thing of mine, trying to sort of, I just so desperately want to raise awareness of the enormity of the sort of issues that people have with drugs and drink, but the grey areas. So not everyone's at actual rock bottom, and if more doctors, more therapists, more consultants can know what the right thing to say would make so much difference. So what would you like to have heard that first time you rocked up there?
I think it was knowing that someone had the experience, because the counsellor didn't have any experience with drugs. Right. So you can't beat that connection of experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when you hear someone has gone through the same problems as you, that's when the rapport is there, and then you trust that person because they've got through it themselves.
Yeah.
So I think from that point of view, you've got the person that does the exams but's never actually lived that experience to someone who's lived the experience. I don't think you can buy that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just give us your website, Sean.
So it's www.fitology.fit. It's just under construction at the moment. So I'll have packages up there for the various niches that I'm targeting at shortly. And I'm on Instagram as well.
Okay. And that's at Fitology on Instagram, yeah?
Yeah, fitology.fit as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean. And the website is personaltrainingwimbledon.com, personaltrainingwimbledon.com. As I say, that interview was recorded a while back, but yeah, I thought it would still be great for you to hear it. Of course, the other thing that happened, and I know I've told you several times, is that over lockdown, I overcame a lifelong limiting belief that I couldn't run. Literally, it was a belief that I've had since childhood, really, that I hate running. I hate everything about running. You know, just makes you feel sweaty and hot and miserable. And I felt my body wasn't the right shape and I was too heavy. And I just hated everything about it. So I've always been a walker. But then, as some of you know, because you've heard me say before, last October, when we did Champneys, a bunch of the women there challenged me to overcome this limiting belief. And of course, I'd been spending the whole weekend challenging them. So, you know, how could I not take on this challenge? And oh man, it was hard. It was really hard for me. But I did it. I did catch to 5K. I still can't believe I did it. And I haven't kept it up to the extent that I ought to. But I did it. I literally overcame a lifelong limiting belief. And I managed to catch to 5K. I'm still a little bit incredulous, but I used all the same skills and kind of techniques that I used to ditch the booze. You know, I got my mindset in the right place after much cajoling with myself. I absolutely did my prep, certainly after the first session when I kind of went off without the right clothing and I didn't have any music on my phone and my earphones weren't. It was disastrous. And I came back kind of utterly miserable and aching and totally not inspired because I hadn't had anything to listen to and it was raining and I hadn't got the right. It was just, everything was crap about it, really. And I realised that, and it's such a similar analogy to when people decide to ditch the booze and they just, right, that's it, I'm not drinking again. And you've put nothing in place at all. And then by the next evening, you've had a really busy day, someone hands you a glass of wine and says, oh, thank God, you know, I'll start tomorrow. And actually, when I then did pause and put the prep in place, which is, of course, what I tell people to do with any behaviour change, it made a massive difference. You know, the next time I went out, I had got my mindset right. I had got a little bit of encouragement and support. I'd got the right clothes to wear. I went out and treated myself to a new jacket that worked. I had music on my phone or podcasts available on my phone. My earphones were working. And I got support. You know, I had my kind of connection and people cheering me on sort of from the sober club. So yeah, so that was amazing. Anyways, you know, as that, I hope that message came across loud and clear that you know, keeping fit's important, right? It's really is the use it or lose it thing. so whatever works for you, you know, just move. It's super important. I still love dancing. Dancing's the thing for me. I don't get to do enough of it, but that works for me, in particular if I'm anxious and stressed. You know, to just shake it out makes a massive difference. So what can I remind you about? There's some competitions to win a whole bunch of fantastic alcohol-free drinks. Most of the competitions are on imperfectlynatural.com, which is my kind of sister website, imperfectlynatural.com. So I'll put that link in the show notes for this podcast. If you go there and click on competitions, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff, because of course I do all my natural living stuff. You're welcome to enter any of the competitions, of course. And if you scroll through, you'll see there's a competition to win Penrose Spirits, who were my guests last week. You can win some Spirited Euphoria. I think we might still have some Naughty AF to win. There's some Sea Arch to win. Goodness, what else? Some kefir, some Agua de Madre, sparkling kefir. That's the water kefir, the dairy-free. There's some really great competitions on there, so please do, you know, have a look. You've got to be in it to win it, right? Do check out Champneys. I don't know if there are any spaces left on our next retreat, which is June the 26th, but it's definitely worth getting your name on the list if you're interested. It's at Tring in Hertfordshire, and it's a deep dive into self-care and focusing on you for that retreat, for that kind of well-being break. So do check that out. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll find it there. And I know I keep mentioning this, I haven't actually got it available to click yet, but I am going to be hosting Sober by the Sea retreat days. So please just drop me a message if that's of interest. These will be one day events, if you like, you know, very small, intimate groups in Essex. And I'm going to be doing a few across the summer. And also I'm going to be doing some one-to-one coaching mentoring in a one day intensive, because not everybody wants to kind of span their coaching over several weeks. Some people like to just deep dive. So I'm going to be offering that as well. So, you know, don't forget, I work as a coach. If that's of interest, just drop me a message. And of course, the Sober Club is open for members at the moment. We are going to close up soon, but we're open right now. It's a whole platform of stuff, so much information and encouragement and inspiration on there, and accountability. You know, we have regular meetups on Zoom, and hopefully we're going to be able to do more in person soon. And that makes such a massive difference, to connect with other people who've been there, done it, got the T-shirt. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed William Porter that, you know, a lot of my clients tell me that their biggest problems are not their friends or people they meet in a work scenario, in terms of their behavior change, in terms of their ditching the booze. It's their own family. It's the people who are closest to them. And these people mean well. Of course they mean well. But if they've not had the shared experience, if they haven't had the voice in the head saying, go on, have another one, you know, oh, you've got this now, you can moderate. If they haven't had that experience, then they can't support you. They mean well, but they can't support you. But people who've been there, done it, got the T-shirt can. And that's exactly what we do in the Sober Club. We support each other. And the support is incredible. The love bombing and the amazing non-judgmental approach. So check it out. It's thesoberclub.com. If you have any ideas for guests for the podcast for me, particularly if you can connect me up with someone who's fabulous, just who's got a great story, just drop me a line. I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. And of course you know where to find me. I must just stress that if this is hard for you at the moment, if you're struggling right now, absolutely reach out. There is help available, and many different types of help as well. Find what you jive with, what kind of group or scenario you jive with, and get that support that you need. Don't hole up. Don't do that insulate yourself thing. Just reach out. If you want to tell someone that you're doing this, tell me. You can absolutely message me and tell me. I'll be your, you know, your virtual champion. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.